From the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company.
Welcome to the Hotel Hell. Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
With Steve Cofield.
Well, I don't need to shave because it don't grow in right here and right here.
Now you're telling me that you were so ingrained with white trash DNA that your facial hair actually grows in on its own, all white trashy like that?
Adam Candy.
I discovered at a very early age that if I talk long enough, I could make anything right or wrong. So either I'm God or truth is relative. And in either case, booyah.
Chrissy Paradis.
This place is crushing my soul.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Sir, one more outburst, I will strangle you with my microphone wire. You understand me?
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
All right, here we go on this Thursday. Cofield and Company, Findlay Toyota Studios. You heard it, Candy, Chrissy, Cofield. That's pretty good. I still don't have a name for Candy that works. So I have to call him Candy because I'm not going Adam because it confuses everybody. I ran the name of Cotton by some people. I like it, but I don't know if you'll like it for Cotton Candy. And what was the Cotton character from? The Ocho? Is that from
which
kind?
Yeah, which kind of fits that? Yeah. That goes along
it's
with the whole ethos over here.
What do you think, Chrissy? I don't think.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Cotton?
Yeah.
I don't think he's gonna go for it. We can't just.
He's not fluffy.
I generally do name people whatever I want to.
True.
But we'll be polite in this case.
Yeah, because I've been asking for polite. The thing is, I don't understand why. Can you really do better than Candy? Like, Candy has been the identity forever. Like, I'm just.
Oh, you do go
that.
By Candy.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
All the time. Now, that said, Cofield and Cotton, I mean, there is a little something to
there
that.
There is a ring.
Like, there's a little something to Cofield and Cotton.
I'd have to be the second part of that, which I will not accept.
Cotton and Cofield.
My ego's too big. It'd have to be Cotton and Cofield. It sounds better.
Okay.
How about Cottonmouth Cofield?
Cottonmouth Cofield?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds bad.
How about foot and mouth?
Yeah, that would be better for, especially just right now.
I feel like you might be extra dingy today with the hair you're rocking. Is that because of the rain? I rarely see Chrissy in pigtails.
Yes,
it's a look.
And I thought that was good. I thought you might notice.
I notice everything.
But, yeah, I'm rocking the pigtails on Valentine's Day.
Okay. Happy Valentine's Day, Las Vegas. Chrissy got you pigtails. Hope you got something for her.
That was good.
Not too late to get to the store.
With a nice, sexy voice.
Look at that.
Are we... Because we're going to get into Valentine's Day later, whether we like it or not.
Not.
Are we mostly pro... Oh, no. God, I walk around the building, and I understand it's raining. Chrissy and I like the rain. You should like the rain, too. You're an East Coast guy.
I'm all about the rain.
Yeah, it's like we never get it. And I walk around the building, and everyone's all mopey on Valentine's Day. Someone asked me earlier, they're like, do you do Valentine's Day? I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I like who I'm with. So maybe that's what it comes down to. A lot of people are like, I don't do it. Like, why not?
Well,
you don't do anything?
Not to the point of not participating. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to go on some sort of three-hour rant about consumerism. Like, that's not what we're here for, but...
Is it?
Wait a minute.
Is that right?
Is that what when I switch into the Cotton alter ego? Is that what I'm supposed to do?
Do you know what would normally happen on this show?
I'm fully aware.
Might be why I'm not
being called Adam.
Mr. Hill is off today and covering hockey instead of ruining my Valentine's Day.
Might be perfect. Might actually work out quite well that way.
Chrissy and I are all about V-Day.
Well, and Steve's all about all holidays. He celebrates Arbor Day.
I do. Flag Day as well.
What do you have against trees? What's with the war on trees?
That's another issue on the show.
Well,
there are people who are anti-tree.
Oh my God, they really need to branch out.
Oh God, go to break off of that.
No,
earliest we've taken
Thank
a break
you.
Without technical issues.
Cotton
in a long time.
Is in the house 3 hours, baby.
I think he's really liking the Cotton thing.
I'm feeling it. It's a little bit snarky. I love it.
So big day in town. We got another hockey game on the way. VGK is not playing well. We'll get into the Golden Knights on several fronts throughout the show. And we've got our viewing party, or at least they do. We'll be down at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. Ryan McKinnell is going to be there in just a little bit. We'll hear from Big Mac multiple times throughout the show. If you go down, they want you to spend a little money. You know, spend at least $10. You get a free beer on Pizza Rock. They've also got happy hour, which is already started. So you've got personal pizzas for $5, $7, and $8. They've got a menu starting at $4. beers. PBRs are four. Well drinks are four. You get a couple bucks off draft beers beyond that. So Pizza Rock is the spot to watch all of your Vegas Golden Knights action. That's road and home, like today. But Big Mac will be down there. You can go down, sign up for your chance to win tickets to a future Golden Knights game and some T-shirts and other goodies being given away. We'll talk to Big Mac in just a little bit. So I didn't get the check. The web, Twitter, the last 15 minutes. I'm guessing nothing has changed from this morning as Girard is playing his games again. Game time decision on Peary and game time decision on the goaltender. Here we go.
Hold on. I am pulling up my tweet deck column for Golden Knights to see what we've got here. No, I know.
If he says it's a game time decision, we're going to find out about 6:15, 6:30. Unless someone from TV leaks it, which we do know that TV gets it earlier than everyone else because they have to do their graphics.
Sure, and I get that for the truck. But I have a thing here where I'm wondering if hockey could possibly get any worse in this situation. We're already stuck with upper body injury and lower body injury. And by the way, depending on your take on this whole thing, I don't know what a busted hip is. I don't know. Lower body injury? Upper body injury? I have no idea. What's a good solid hip check in this whole thing? But in the end, you know, Gallant's going to play this game. Okay, fine. Like, I can't believe in year two, we're already into these, like, motivational games when it comes to the psychology of the whole thing. It's kind of tough to believe.
Motivational for who? Players?
Motivational for Girard. Look what he's... All right.
Oh, I think these are just games with the media. Because he got irked a while back that... people were pressing him on the injuries, and they got caught in this whole game they played where it was a healthy scratch thing. I'm not going into all of it. So now he's like, good, I'm not telling you anything. Chrissy, what's the drop we have where he's like, you guys started this, saying it to the media.
I didn't create this mess. You know that, eh?
There it is. I didn't create this mess. So now we're just going to play the game where we don't know if it's going to be Flurry for game 51 or 52 this year.
Don't you think he's protecting his players, ultimately? Don't you think that's what it comes down to and why I go to the motivation tack? Because in the end, he's sticking up for his guys in a way to say, you know what, we'll deal with it in here. We don't need your intrusion. That whole us against the world sort of deal that tends to come up, I don't know, in any locker room that needs something. I mean, if you go up on the shelf of motivational tropes the coaches grab, that one is always right out on the ledge. Like, you can always get that one and pull it down.
The us against them?
Us against them.
Okay.
Just a theory.
All right. Hey, everyone has a different approach. So yeah, I personally like what Eric Winalda is doing so far. And I don't know that he's going to change because I think Eric Winalda, and it's a different situation. VGK came in. They won. They're the darling of the market with the sports fans. The Lights did okay last year. On the field, they weren't very good, but they still performed pretty well, I thought, at the box office considering the field there. It's not a soccer field yet. But I think he realizes, hey, I got to play to the crowd, and I got to make sure that I'll say half coach, half marketer. I think what he's done so far, and I don't know if folks have noticed it, Bischoff's been on it the most because he's a big soccer guy and he's going to be out there covering him, but the way Winalda has approached Las Vegas has been tons of fun so far.
The one thing I think this franchise didn't have last year was some level of star power. They did everything else right. Like, they drew more headlines for losing in minor league soccer than I think I've ever seen before. But when you talk about the Llamas and the cash drop and, all right, and Chalice and some things you might not want to talk about with Chalice.
You know what, though? Let's break in here.
All right.
Because this is interesting. So, we know... the folks who run this team know what they're doing. They've had success in building from minors to get an MLS team.
Right.
They completely botched it last year with Chalice. They didn't see his lunacy coming. Like, there's lunacy that works, and then there was lunacy that was just stupidity. I don't think people realized Chalice decided at some point in the season when he dealt with the media, and we are a conduit to, you know, deliver the story, pump things up, get you folks out to the games. He decided somewhere in the season he wasn't going to speak English. So the English-speaking media would sit there and they'd be like, okay, he's not going to talk to us? And that was such a major gaffe. And it's funny, I think they've turned it around like that, and they've completely nailed it with a high-profile guy who I might have thought Wijnaldum would come to the market and go, do you know who I am? Come out. And that was it. And he's done way more than that. He's got a great attitude. He's playing with the media a little bit. I think he's going to be great with the fans. So while last year Talese turned into a freaking disaster on and off the field, so far Wijnaldum has been excellent.
I would have been shocked if Brett Lashbrook, the owner of the Lights, would go for someone who would walk in here with that, you know, I'm wearing the Eric Wijnaldum jersey. Don't right. ask me who I am. You know who I am. I'm national team Eric Wijnaldum. Like, I can't imagine Brett Lashbrook, being as marketing savvy as he is, would go through that. And you talk about Talese, and you talk about a myriad of issues that you could go down that road. But they took a chance. They took a swing at something. Mm-hmm. They didn't just bring in Joe Soccer, who nobody knows,
right.
and think, let's bring in a boring coach and build them up for 5 years and become the greatest minor league soccer team we've ever seen. They came in putting on the show, and they did a good job of putting on the show. And I think with the field being all theirs next year and being able to use Cashman as they please, I think they're going to be in a much better position to do more of that. And I agree with you. Wijnaldum has been a great guy to come in here and do that. And the star power he brings along with that is something this team was missing.
So we've got another team coming here in, you know, a little over a year and a half, right? Under a year and a half now. The Raiders.
Yeah.
I think we know what we're getting just in the basic premise of it's the NFL, it's big time. But there are certain signs with the Raiders, and I know you've seen them and you probably called them, where you're like, this seems small time. Certainly, what's going on right now with this desperate search for a home in 2019 reeks of small time. And for some people here, especially those, I mean, are there really going to be repercussions? Probably not, but those who approved $750 million, and by the way, that will go over $1 billion because, get ready, we've already been told, hey, that Trop interchange, all those roads around the stadium, that's going to cost money. So we're in this in excess of $1 billion, and it does worry a little bit what's going on with the Raiders right now, right?
In short, yes, and I'll take you through a little bit of my background, because when I was at the Sun, I was covering this issue for more than a year with the stadium. And so I got to know the players. I mean, the players involved in this, not, you know, not all of the Oakland Raider players. But I got to know the players in this situation. I got to know the folks up in Oakland. I got to know some folks around the team. And they are unable to take a punch a lot of the time. And they don't like it. They just don't like it. And when in the media, if you punch at the Raiders, oftentimes they will just cut you off. And so when you try to take a swing, sometimes you're asking them, hey, before I take a swing, what can I do? Can I get a comment from you? Do you want to do an interview? Like, I want your side of the story. And the reason I bring all that up is because the lawsuit was filed by the city of Oakland, and the council took a swing, and the Raiders did not like it. And so they came back and said, you know what? We're out of here.
Screw you.
You know what? We'll take our football and go home. But you know what the problem is? We don't have a home. So you can't take your football and go home when you don't have anywhere to go. So the Raiders, I'm not going to give away all of my sourcing on this, but I will tell you from what I know from the players involved in this, the lease was pretty much done. The 2019 lease before the council got involved was pretty much set. And it blew up over this. The Raiders went on this months-long spinning around, going over to San Francisco, cutting a deal with the Giants before they knew whether the Niners would allow it, and now they find themselves coming right back. And I've been telling people all along, and I'm telling you today, I have said from day one, don't close the door on Oakland. It's not over yet, because they had to get over the hurt feelings. That's the small time to me, the hurt feelings of the lawsuit, the fact that the council came after them. And really, they're not trying to stop them from going. That's not why the council sued them. They're going on this long goose chase, you know? They're going on this goose chase to try to get money and to try to keep the name. Like, it's silly in its own right, but the Raiders didn't look at it that way. They took it as a slight. And now here we are with them having to kind of, I'm not going to say come crawling back. That's too much. It's too far. But I've thought all along they were ending up back in Oakland, and I will be very surprised if they don't.
We're going to try to hunt down Jeremy Roenick a little later in the hour. But on the way back, we got a quick update on some rumors around future Super Bowls. Remember, our stadium here is opening in 2020, and they've already booked the Super Bowl through 2024.
Cofield and Company will be back in minutes, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling on here on this Thursday, we got Golden Knights back on the ice, trying to get it right at the Fortress against the very talented Maple Leafs. We'll check in with the folks at Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch. We got our viewing party going down at Pizza Rock for that 7 o'clock start. Not a major update on future Super Bowls, but just a news story that came down a little while ago. We should get the Super Bowl in 2025. If we don't, it's outrageous. I'm already livid that we're not getting it in 2020, 21, 22, 23, 24. I think I gave an extra year there, but we're not getting it at the earliest until 2025. The story today was that the Atlanta Sports Council president, a guy named Dan Corso, his group has sent in a letter of interest to host 2025, 26, or 27. Bro. Wait your turn, all right? If I know you're not that high on the Super Bowl being here, you don't necessarily think we need it, but if we spend $1 billion on a stadium, we better get the Super Bowl every 5 years. And it's already ridiculous we're not getting it at the earliest until 2025. There better not be any other freaking city that jumps in front of us for 2025.
What else could we give you that would make it worth $1 billion? Because right now, you are hard on that one, and I get it.
Until 2025, we can host lots of events. I hope there's an NCAA regional there, a Final Four there, a championship game, a semifinal game for college football, you know, WrestleMania, lots of other events. But if you put up $1 billion for the NFL, and that's what we did, this is for the NFL, we better get a Super Bowl, and it better be soon. And now we know the soonest is 2025.
It wasn't going to be much sooner than that ever. I mean, really.
Why? LA's getting it the first year.
Because this whole thing got set. No, they're not actually getting it the first year because they had to push back.
It the first year.
That screwed up the rhythm a little bit, too. Like, LA having to push back because of the air quotes rain problem.
But, Adam, did they really have to name 21, 22, 23? They had to name 22, 23 6 months ago?
This is typical. I mean, this is not out of order for them. They're not going somewhere where they haven't been before.
They did it, we should have been in that initial rotation. Or are they worried about, do we have to have all the gambling stuff buttoned up with, and this is the NFL's fault, not us. We got it buttoned up. Like, does there have to be this soft cushion because Vegas is a different sort of market?
I actually don't think so. I don't think it's the gambling thing, really. I honestly think they want to get a look and see this stadium open up and make sure that everything is where it's supposed to be. You don't want to give it to them for 22 or 23 and have it be pushed back a year and start in 21, then who the heck knows what goes wrong with the thing.
Wait. LA's getting it. Kroenke, and that's the key, Kroenke's getting it when they open. How come he doesn't have to wait? Because it's Stan Kroenke, which is amazing. They actually should reward the markets that are putting up public money for the stadium. Good for Stan Kroenke that he put up his own money. I think that's what everyone should do. But why is Kroenke getting rewarded before we get rewarded?
I don't have a good answer as to why it's not happening the first year, to be honest. I'm not gonna tell you why the NFL didn't come out here with it. Because typically, and we saw this with the last five places that either built a stadium or renovated one, I'm talking about Miami in terms of renovating one, they were granted the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Like, they got theirs. I hear you.
Yep.
I understand. I get what's going on here. So let's get back to the point with the Atlanta thing. With the Atlanta thing, like, come on, man. Like, if you think that this guy's going to break up with his girlfriend, just wait till he actually does. Don't submit your letter of interest in her DMs until you actually are sure that there's going to be a breakup here. Like, don't be that guy. So, Atlanta, don't be that guy.
I think what's happening, because this is the cool part of the story, and this is up on Pro Football Talk. The writer says there's a belief that eventually there'll be a rotation. L.A., Miami, New Orleans, Vegas. Okay, that's good. I want to be in the rotation of four. And then wild card cities get every fifth. So Atlanta, did you hear your name in that rotation of four? You're a wild card city. Sorry.
Vegas should be in the rotation without question because we're an event town. It's the biggest event in American sports. This is not rocket science. Like, I completely understand
Vegas
that.
Vegas should be number one in the rotation. My personal feeling is New Orleans, should be two. L.A. should be three. I'm not even sure Miami should be in it. I've been to Super Bowls in Miami, and I know the Super Bowl next year is in Miami. It's a pain in the ass because it's very spread out because they split it between Dade and Broward, so you've got stuff going on in Lauderdale and in Miami. And then the stadium's really in between. So I understand the weather's awesome, and that should be one thing they ensure from here forward. These cold weather cities, even with domes, are a freaking nightmare. No one wants to go to Minneapolis or Kansas City or, you know, you name it, where they've been, where it's been a little chillier.
So you think that Stan Kroenke is a, what, a full step ahead, two, three steps ahead of Mark Davis in the pecking order? In the NFL owner pecking order?
One step? He's 30 steps?
So Stan Kroenke's number one, Mark Davis is last.
No, I don't think, I think Davis is last the way he's treated, and I would say Kroenke is two. Maybe three.
Behind Jerry.
Maybe three. Jerry and Kraft.
Okay,
although
Jerry
Patriots
and Kraft,
fans will tell you that, you know, Kraft is somehow dissed all the time, but
he absolutely is. There's no question about it. Just ask Meek Mill.
Yes, yes. That was, you're laying it on thick there. All right, we turn our attention first time this show, well, actually second time, we're going to be hitting VGK and Toronto multiple times. We're going to try to hook up here with Jeremy Roenick in just a few.
You're 90 seconds away from more Cofield and Company, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Roenick racing back into the safety zone, got away from Kennedy, cuts it around to check, he scores! Jeremy Roenick! An electrifying rush as he eluded one check, then stick handled brilliantly around Wakalak and tucked it in. A great goal for Roenick.
Take it away, is Jeremy Roenick's doing his disco dance.
Luke better leave the dancing to Roenick.
Go dance, huh? Okay. All right, it's Valentine's Day. We allow anything, right? Chrissy's all fired up. She's rocking the pigtails today. Folks coming in asking for her. That's very nice. Well, you're making a mark in this market. God, she's doing a good job. Very good job. She grabbed Jeremy Roenick on a very busy day to talk some NHL, to talk the Vegas Golden Knights, and he's on the horn with Cofield and Company. How are you?
I am great. How are you guys doing?
We're good. So what are you doing today? Are you doing an appearance?
I am. I'm actually getting ready to go out to northern Chicago and sign autographs, kiss babies, take pictures. I'm doing all my I represent Coors Light out here in the Midwest, and these are a lot of fun for me. So get to go out and have some fun with the great fans of Chicago.
All right, well, let's get into what's going on with the Vegas Golden Knights. When I say that, do you kind of scoff at that? I guess our expectations are so high. It's like, whoa, they're struggling on home ice. What do you think's happening right now with the Golden Knights?
Well, I think, you know, it's been a pretty entertaining year and a half in Vegas for the hockey team. Yeah. There's no question. I think, you know, for them doing the almighty in the first year of making it to the Stanley Cup Finals and then having a very short summer and coming right back again, having to play 82 games, it's really hard to keep an emotional level that you're an excited level that you're supposed to going into games. I think this team has shown that they can win hockey games against anybody that they're playing. You know, they're just finishing the what they call the dog days, right? The games 40 through 55, 40 through 60. And these last 20 games, the last 20 games are when they really ramp up, try to get that last push for the playoffs. They're going to be fine. That's one team that I don't worry about because they work, and they work hard and fast. So it's just finding some breaks, too. You know, they'll be fine.
Do you think there could be an urgency issue with the fact that they're going to have a tough time catching anyone in front of them, and it doesn't look like unless they collapse, they can be caught from behind? So they're in this weird zone. They have to be unbelievable down the stretch. I mean, maybe they're a little bit relaxed in terms of urgency.
Well, I think that all has to do with the time of year. They, you know, they started off the year terribly, and we all know that. But then they went on a absolutely torrid run, And now they're settling back down to earth. And you know that they don't. And trust me, when guys tell you that they don't look at standings and they don't read papers, they're lying. They're lying.
Yeah.
They read the papers. They know where they are. And that could be very, very true. They could feel very comfortable where they are and know that they're going to make the playoffs. And it's just getting there is really the big challenge.
Jeremy, if you were looking at this team, let's say January 1, if you're George McPhee and you're looking at this team and you were prioritizing what you needed to add to this team, you know you've got Eric Halla out. You don't know exactly what his return looks like. You know that you don't have a great deal of depth on the blue line. Where would you prioritize adding to this team?
Well, I think they do have good offense. They've shown they can score goals. I think their defensemen, they don't have any superstars on defense. They've got good players. I think one of probably the favorite is Nate Schmidt, who plays a very fast, very competitive game. All of them can skate. I think five or six defensemen, would probably be a good stay-at-home defenseman. That's tough. That's mean. You can always use a 15 to 20 goal scorer down on your third line. Maybe a 10 to 15 goal scorer on your third line that you can count on every third game to put points on the board. But I mean, this team is very, very sound. I don't think you can't make too many major moves because I think they're built through their chemistry in their locker room. They haven't mixed it up too much. I just think they have to raise their level a little bit, the guys that are there.
So you talk about building that chemistry, and obviously you're talking about doing it from scratch here in Vegas. But I lived in Arizona while you were spending time with the Coyotes, and I'm curious about bringing hockey to the desert. I'm curious about when you're trying to not only build the culture around the team, but you're also trying to build a hockey community. What sort of things can you look at from what it was like doing that in Arizona to what's going on here in Vegas?
Well, I think number one, it's, the people in Arizona weren't, it's obviously the non-traditional market, right? It was
all
basketball and football and baseball, especially around spring training. So we had to convince people to go inside and to where it's a little colder to watch a game that, people didn't understand. So we had to go right from the grassroots. We had to go to the kids. We had to build hockey arenas. We had to start organizations where we introduced it to the kids. We had to play street hockey with the kids and the kids at schools and stuff like that. So it was definitely focused on getting deep down to the young kids to get them excited, get the soccer moms to understand. To understand that hockey is really important. And I think it's the same there. I think with Vegas, unfortunately, because of the terrible shooting that happened, they fell into a built-in reason to really rally into their community, really go in and to show how much they care, to give back to the community, to take care of the wounded, to do different events to help raise money for the community. They did that in droves, not to mention built a beautiful arena out there. But listen, hockey players and hockey organizations know how to dive into the community, and they've done it extremely well out there. I will tell you this, with all the teams that I've worked with, the Golden Knights have the best organization for allowing people to get in and see things and give them access and do everything that they possibly can to build relationships and build attention. They've been great with me at NBC, and they've been great with people around the city of Vegas and making everybody understand that Vegas can support a professional team, and boy, have they done that in droves.
That's Jeremy Roenick here on Cofield & Company. I'm so glad you went there with access, because it's interesting. The last couple of days, I don't know if you saw it, but Gerard Gallant got a little annoyed with the media, and I think he was more annoyed with one of his players or a couple of his players mentioning that, hey, they had a meeting after the last game. Maybe it got a little bit intense. There's a line, right, on access, and Gerard seems to – he's gotten annoyed on a couple of occasions when players have said, hey, the coach read the Riot Act to us. Why do you think Gerard is so protective about what goes on in the locker room?
Well, I think he just wants to make sure that the guys don't get inundated with doing too much stuff away from the arena. I mean, it's hard enough to go to the practice every day, work hard, get in the gym, go to the games, get your butt beat in, you know, the amount of travel that they have to do, the lack of sleep that they have, and then have to turn around to have to do media things or do things in the community or do things at the local hospitals or whatever. You know, there has to be a fine line. And sometimes when you're a new team, you want to try to do everything. So somebody's got to be the bad guy to say, hey, listen, we got to slow this down here, add a little pieces here and make sure that the guys are still getting the rest and the proper nutrition that they can when they're not playing.
Many of us are newbies to hockey in this market. You know, it's an event for a lot of fans. What are folks going to see from the Leafs' Austin Matthews tonight?
They're going to see one of the best players on the planet. And you talk about a guy who was born in California, grew up in Arizona, right? So he's definitely a non-traditional baby in terms of the hockey world. But this is a guy that has extreme, extreme hockey talent, extreme hockey mentality, IQ. And if you just watch the guy play, he never, ever gives up on a puck. If somebody comes near him, takes a puck, you can see him, you know, working his ass off to get back to get that puck back. And he has tremendous, tremendous shot and his ability to control the puck. You guys will have such a treat to watch him. And this team is very offensive. So I'll tell you, the Golden Knights, they're struggling at home. They have no easy one tonight, that's for sure.
And the Leafs have been red hot this season, one of the best teams on the road. Jeremy, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. I know you're very busy today. Thanks.
You got it, guys. Good luck tonight.
There you go. Jeremy Roenick. 7 o'clock start tonight. Leafs in town to take on the Golden Knights. We did not get into Fleury, who is still the busiest goaltender in all of the NHL. And we've been talking about this as a theme. We started talking about it early on. This is game 51. If he starts, I forgot. If he starts, we mentioned half an hour ago, game time decision, right?
The game time decisions keep coming for these Golden Knights, and we, of course, do not have an answer to that yet.
Yeah, Fleury on the air, 29-17-4. And just looking at the preview in the Toronto Sun, he's actually been less than stellar against the Leafs. His record's solid. But the Leafs are one of four teams that he actually has a save percentage below
900. I hate versus team stats. I really do.
The sample's big.
The problem.
Why?
The sample's
big. Pittsburgh.
Unless he's playing against Doug Gilmore from 1996. Unless he's playing against Jeremy Roenick, who suddenly in my construct here has gone to the Leafs. No, that's why, you get it in baseball, too. Oh, you know, Masahiro Tanaka just cannot pitch against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They've had 75 different players in the uniforms. No, I just
33 games!
Oh, God. So when it comes to Fleury, when it comes to what they're doing with him this year, I think part of the problem is you have to look behind him, too. And you have to say that Malcolm Subban's been okay. Max Legacy hasn't really played much. And last year, those guys, Subban and Legacy and even Oscar Dansk, shout out Oscar Dansk, were coming up big for the Golden Knights when Marc-Andre Fleury was out with his concussion issues. He doesn't have that same... Gerard Gallant does not have that same luxury behind Marc-Andre Fleury for a team that, frankly, has to win with defense. Look at what this Golden Knights team has been this year. Alex Tuch has 40 points and is the leading scorer on the Golden Knights. That is tied for 84th in the NHL. In terms of individual scores, 84th, and yet this team is still in a playoff position because they are a defensive team. That, by the way, to me, is why Gerard Gallant went so nuts about the Coyotes game, because they weren't working hard. They weren't doing the things they need to do. And if that team doesn't work hard, especially in the forecheck, they're not going to win games the way they're going right now.
I mentioned the media battles in the discussion with Jeremy Roenick, so it'll be interesting tonight if our guy, Adam Hill, needs to go at Gerard Gallant if there's an issue, because he got crushed the other day. I'll give you the guy he should follow. Michael Collins, who covers golf for ESPN, a former caddy, he was talking about Matt Kuchar. Holy crap, did he bring it? And I'm assuming he's going to see him soon. Michael Collins does not care.
Matt Kuchar is completely in the wrong here. He's not only completely in the wrong, he's so disconnected from what's right and what's wrong. He knows. He won the Sony Open a month later. I guarantee you his caddy, John Wood, got a lot more than $5,000.
Finley Toyota in the Valley Auto Mall has the largest Toyota service facility in Nevada. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Nice. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We got tips coming up. We're going to go through our plans. I think everyone's got elaborate plans tonight. Let's go down to Pizza Rock Valentine's night. Great place to watch some hockey as the Golden Knights are taking on the Maple Leafs. Ryan McKinnell's on the scene. What's cooking, Ryan?
Steve, Cotton, how you guys doing?
We're good. What's cooking down there?
Hey, buddy.
Well, what's cooking is we got happy hour going from 3 to 6, as you know. And I got to tell you, Steve, I'm in love with the $7 and $8 personal pizzas. I'm obsessed with the $4 meatballs. I'm smitten with the $4 well drinks. I'm infatuated by the $4 Italian fries. And I'm yearning for the $4 32-ounce PBRs. Do you see what I did there? You see the theme I'm going with?
I got it. If you're subtle about it, we all understand it. Yeah, you don't have to point it out. It was good.
So, yeah, we're down here. Fun note, if you come down in your VGK gear, spend $10, you're going to get a free beer with your purchase. And, of course, as we do with all these parties down here, we got signups for future ticket giveaways for the Vegas Golden Knights. So come on down here to Pizza Rock, hang with me from 3 to 6, sign up, win some Vegas Golden Knight tickets. Oh, we got some shirts and some other giveaways, too. We're all stacked here, ready to go.
Oops. How much, Ryan McKinnell, do you love Austin Matthews? How dangerous could he be tonight?
How much do I love Austin Matthews what tonight?
Exactly. Exactly. We'll check in with you in a little bit, okay? Thanks, Ryan.
Okay, buddy.
Ryan can't hear us. All right. So let's get into the latest controversy in golf. Yeah. And it's not really a major time for golf, right? But this is actually going back to last year. Matt Kuchar wins a tournament in November. By the way, Allie's in studio with us. It's Candy, Cofield, Chrissy. How quick that was. Kuchar wins a tournament in November. He hires a local caddy. It's not his normal caddy. He agrees to pay the guy $3,000, $3,500, something like that before the tournament. He goes on to win the tournament. He wins $1.3 million. Generally, the caddy will get 5% of the take. Kuchar bumps it to $5,000. That's not $26,000, right? So he severely underpays by normal standards, this caddy. It gets out. And the amazing part is Kuchar won't back off and is almost putting it on the caddy, like, how dare you? Because he actually offered the caddy more money, and the caddy pulled something I love to pull. If you don't do right by me the first time, I don't want your money. If you're not going to fix it by throwing money at me, shove it. So Michael Collins covers golf. He does a great job. He's the dude, the black dude with the giant, you know, now it's a silver beard. He's really little. But I guess he's a badass out there because, boy, they were talking about Kuchar in this whole situation, and he freaking brought it.
Matt Kuchar's completely in the wrong here. He's not only completely in the wrong, he's so disconnected from what's right and what's wrong. He knows he won the Sony Open a month later. I guarantee you his caddy, John Wood, got a lot more than $5,000.
So for you guys, we're going to play more Collins here in a second. For you guys, this is a basic tipping situation. The guy won $1.3 million. He knows what the standard is. $5,000? Seriously?
I don't even know if it's basic tipping. I mean, I think it goes beyond that because the caddy game is a relationship game in the long run. This is way deep into my background, former member of the Golf Writers Association of America. I've been around this for long enough to know that it's not just I picked up a local guy and slid him, what was the original deal, $3,500, I believe, for him that week. $3,500, then he got a little bump up to
$5,000. Really, he tipped $1,500 on a $1.3 million win.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, you want to look at it as tipping. I could live with that, but it goes beyond that. It really does. And Matt Kuchar's not a guy who's had this sort of stain following
him. He's actually, his rep is that he's one of the good guys
exactly.
of the game.
That's the
so
thing.
I was shocked when I saw this, but then he's doubling down on it. He's made comments since. He's like, oh, $5,000 is a lot of money. Like, dude, is that what you normally pay your caddy?
It doesn't even matter because it's so out of touch with what the average person watching it is going to think, right? Nobody needs an education on golf. I can sit here and tell you it's a relationship thing. Nobody needs an education to understand that if I get $5,000 on a million plus, something went wrong. if I'm the guy on the bag, and 5% is standard. There are some deals that are a little better than that for guys who've been with their players longer. You know, if you're Bones, you weren't pulling 5% at the end before you got you split up with Mickelson. So, yeah, I think that it's just out of touch in general, but this becomes the overall complaint about the PGA Tour, right? Beyond Tiger, who brought the relatability factor, beyond Phil, who was the people's champion, this was the relatability factor, and it just isn't there when you hear stuff like this.
Drives me nuts about golf. Drives me nuts.
It doesn't have to be this way.
A lot of country club dudes, out of touch. You see what babies they are when it comes to dealing with the fans, the paying fans, what babies they were all year last year. Here's more Michael Collins on this Kuchar deal where he skates on giving this caddy real money.
Think about this, $1.3 million. His caddy made 0.38%. If we go to a restaurant together, we agree on the price of the food. What we don't talk about is what you tip the wait staff. And in sense, Matt Kuchar didn't tip the wait staff. And what he offered to pay the guy was only after the story got out.
Yes. So at that point, sorry, too late.
I don't know. I've been a server in this town for years, on and off, and I kind of feel like it's none of our business.
It's our business.
The way that I read it was that they had an agreement before the
tournament. Then you tip on a win, though, Allie.
I get that.
What happens at a bar with a hit on the machines? Now, I think some people are crazy. Some people think.
Then you suck it up and you go on with your day.
Nah.
But do you talk to anybody about it? Do you talk to the rest of the – if you get someone where you get this ridiculous eight top – they run you for an hour and a half, and they leave $10 on the table. Do you go and talk to the rest of the wait staff and say, look at that?
Yeah, you bet.
And here we are. Here we are in the ESPN Las Vegas studios having that same kind of discussion, I think. That's kind of the way I see what we're doing right now.
I get that, but this is at a more national scale for sure. I just feel like there was already an agreement in play, and I guess you could
argue
that
for the base pay, not the tip.
Right.
For the base pay. He exceeded
his
expectations.
Everyday caddy, right? This was just some guy he picked up off the street.
Which makes it even more special that he won with a caddy that he doesn't know. That means I'm not saying the caddy did all the work, but the caddy certainly didn't get in his way of winning. Let's finish with Michael Collins from ESPN, who at the end here, man, I can't wait until he has to face Matt Kuchar.
And Matt Kuchar in the article said he still sleeps good at night after giving him $5,000. They're playing in Mexico next week, David. Sleep tight, Matt Kuchar, dummy.
How about that? I love that.
Hey,
this is what golf needs.
Now there's threats.
Because Michael Collins was a caddy. Let's fill that piece of the puzzle in here. Michael Collins was a caddy. And Michael Collins is as plugged in on that tour as anyone else. Michael Collins didn't get out on the air on ESPN earlier and say this without having talked to a number of players and a number of caddies. He has filtered this through other people before he's taken this swing, and this is a huge swing.
My guess is that Kuchar being pitched on this is the problem with golf and golf broadcasting. It's disingenuous because we hear about, oh, it's the gentleman's game and they're all good guys, and then every year we're seeming to find out about new crumbs, you know, Patrick Reed, what's his name? Spieth is a giant pain in the ass. His caddy's a jerk. Now we're getting real reporting on golf, and we're finding out, oh, the Kuchar good guy thing that Nance always throws out there. I will guarantee you, Michael Collins ain't saying this about Kuchar. If he's well-liked by everyone, that guy has a rep. If Michael Collins is willing to call someone dumb, then other dudes on the tour have his back.
You know what? There's a big difference between what we're selling here, between TV and the rest of that media out there, right? TV and the contracts they have. If you're CBS and you've got the deal for the tour and you've got the Masters and you've got this and that, then Nance has to go out there and play half PR. It's just what happens. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's what happens. And a guy like Nance, who's buddies with Freddie Couples, who is as close to anybody else as there is, that's exactly what happens. Now you get a guy like Michael Collins, who is plugged in out there and is willing to go out there and say it. I'm happy for him, and I don't think it's the first time this reporting existed. I can tell you from the years that I covered the tour, I can tell you who the guys were that I didn't want to deal with. I can tell you who the guys were who blew me off. I can tell you who the ones were that wouldn't even look at me when I'd come in the locker room. And that's not just because I am who I am, a nobody guy from a Las Vegas paper. That's because these guys are every bit the professional athletes that other professional athletes are. You just don't hear about it the same way. There are good guys and bad guys in every locker room. It's nothing new. That part's nothing new. But I hear what Steve's saying. It's not usually covered that way. And maybe that's just a general lack of interest in golf.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas.